Are you familiar with like competitive Excel?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. I know that it exists. I have not.
Okay.
Well, actually, I have watched it just a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's good stuff.
That is the thing that my brain is not capable of comprehending.
Oh, yeah, same, I think, probably. Without, like, hours of study.
Yeah, competitive Excel is the funniest esport. It's like, I can't remember where I was, but I was in most likely a hotel or a Buffalo Wild Wings, and on the television was competitive cornhole.
Okay.
And it feels the same way to me, where it's like a completely mundane, normal thing that people do, but has like shoutcasters and uniforms and like chyrons and all of that stuff when people are showing it. And it's just like, this is just a bunch of like, how are these people supposed to perform cornhole when they're not holding a beer in the other hand? Like this is not a competitive thing. You can't do this.
Yeah. You're not allowed to give 100% of your attention to this game.
Exactly.
Maybe you have to be at least slightly disinterested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe less so for Excel, but it feels the same way where you just look at it. And you're like, these people are business casual attire on Twitch. What's happening here?
What's going on? Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Codex. It's a casual lore podcast. My name is Phil.
I am Logan.
And today we are talking about Lyrium. A rock? A metal? Perhaps the divine rivers of the metaphysical realm? Whom's could say?
Could be all three, maybe?
It very well might be.
Okay.
But before we get into that, what's your bright spot, Logan?
Oh, man. I feel like I've forgotten so many of these since it's been a bit since we have been in front of a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with, I just started rewatching a YouTube series from the channel Jeporite, Jeporite, and he does what is referred to as a Snowflake Iron Man account. This is a region locked account to the northern latitudes. So if you extend the ditch for the wilderness in both directions across the entire map, he stays north of that line.
Okay. Is Snowflake because it's cold, or is that a specific thing?
Snowflake because you're doing like really specific dumb restrictions.
Okay.
Yeah. But the specific bright spot is like it took him, I think, 2 years from the time he first started recording to getting episode one published.
Oh.
Yeah, he operates on like our time schedule. I'm just like, man, yeah, we'll get there. Sometimes I'm gonna have to give myself an ultimatum to do it, but like it'll get there. But they are excellent on top of that. So it's nice to see a like highly polished product that I think is very well done that is produced in the same manner that we end up approaching things sometimes.
Nice. And you started rewatching this?
Yeah. I lost track at some point. So I'm sure there are an episode or two that I have not seen yet, but I haven't made it that far.
That's awesome. Ugh, I can't.
I was current a while ago.
I can't imagine having 2 years of planning to go into doing that.
I don't think it was like 2 years of active planning. I think it was 2 years of I started this project and I got 80% of the way through it, and now it's not as interesting to me as I wanted it to be, sort of thing. At some point, what he did was like, okay, I'm no longer allowing myself to play on the account until episode one is published. And it was from there that there was a pretty big time gap.
Okay.
So
it's a good challenge.
Yeah. It's that kind of thing that I definitely connect with.
Nice.
What is your bright spot? of these past few weeks here?
Oh, my bright spot is, let's see. I made cranberry orange scones yesterday for breakfast, which is not my bright spot. However, the bright spot is this morning I made a like powdered sugar and orange juice glaze for them. And
okay,
putting that onto a cranberry orange scone just leveled it up from this is perfectly fine and serviceable breakfast food to I now have a delicious breakfast dessert that is bringing me joy and happiness and citrus brightness in the morning.
Is this dangerous technology you have uncovered?
Oh, I mean, it's technology I've known for a while, but I do the best part about making scones is that almost always when you purchase the ingredients at the store, you only have to use half of them to make the batch of scones. So the actual dangerous technology here is that I still have almost everything left over to make another batch, perhaps tomorrow. Whoops could say.
I mean, if you don't, those things will go bad at some point. So
yeah, I mean, it's actually good for the earth and also me to make another batch of scones tomorrow, I think.
It would be irresponsible of you not to.
It's true. Fiscally irresponsible not to make scones. I think you've made the case for me.
That's exactly what I'm here for. We can stop recording the show now.
All right, shut it down.
A weird but long con.
Yeah. All
right. To get these scones made. I cannot tell you why. You just have to make them.
Just 6 months leading up to a 5-minute conversation about scones and how we have to make them again.
The future gets weird, okay?
Fair enough. All right. Speaking of weird, we're talking about Lyrium. From the Dragon Age series. And I think we touched on this a little bit in the N7 program episode, but I'm curious, can you tell me what your experience with Dragon Age is?
Played through all of 1. Played through some of 2. Definitely not all. And a little bit of 3.
And, like, specifically the multiplayer in 3?
A ton of the multiplayer. I wasn't going to count that, because that's relatively unconnected.
Okay, okay.
That's almost entirely unconnected, from what I remember of it. But I remember almost none of 2 and 3 at all.
Okay. So when I say Lyrium, does that mean anything to you?
I mean, I remember Red, maybe, like, veins of red in a cliffside or something, and or magic related.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time.
Okay. Perfect. That's enough to get started with, I think. So Lyrium is a blue metal or a rock of some variety, and it specifically grows. It is in, I guess, rocks. In the dwarven realm, kind of in the deep roads and deep underground, and it is blue, it is iridescent and smooth, and it is refined into a liquid that kind of functions like a metal, and then it is turned into metal goods or is used in different ways. Kind of the interesting things about the raw material is that it's incredibly volatile, and sometimes it just explodes for reasons,
as all great things do.
Yeah. And then also, if you touch it, the physical contact with raw Lyrium ore can really mess up a human, elf, or a Kunari, and is possible to kill a mage outright if you just touch it. If it's the unrefined stuff, so it's pretty not good to be around generally.
I'm somewhat afraid to ask, but do we know how it murders you?
We'll get there.
Okay.
not specifically, but there's some theories.
All right.
So
I'm sure they're all super chill.
Yeah, nothing to worry about. We're definitely not going to get into metaphysical discussions or perhaps drugs when we get to the end of this episode. Just buckle up. It's
definitely not an episode of our podcast.
Nope, definitely not. So I mentioned that it was dangerous for like physical harm and psychological damage for humans, elves, and the Qunari. Left out of that, obviously, are the dwarves. So it seems like they are the only group that's capable of safely mining it and processing it. And I think part of that is just because they've been around for a long time in the area. So they're naturally resistant, but not immune. Also, perhaps related, but unknown if it is or is not. But the dwarves in Dragon Age generally are, like, they do not have magic. So, you know, maybe those things are connected, maybe they're not. But it's kind of unclear.
Gotcha. So it seems to aggressively interact with magic users.
Yeah.
And the dwarves are not that.
Yeah.
So
there's also...
That tracks. Okay.
There's also kind of a thing about how dwarves are able to find it because they can hear it. There's a thing. Ooh. There's a lot of stuff in Dragon Age in general about songs and how things can be heard. You'll hear it from the Grey Wardens, who are the main characters and like the big group that you play as in the first game, where they're able to hear the Blight, and they'll hear like the call of the Archdemon. Dwarves are able to hear the stone sing. And it is both, I think, in discovering Lyrium and then also just kind of understanding what types of stone are there. And I think there's also stuff about songs for the elves as well. All creation myth related, I think.
I want to just acknowledge Call of the Archdemon. That's just a good string of words.
Yeah. Yeah. Grey Wardens are cool. Well, they will be another episode for sure. So the dwarves are mostly resistant to it. And as a belief structure, they're kind of taught that Lyrium itself is a gift from the stone. And when I say stone, that is a capital S stone. So it is it has like some amount of, like holiness, I guess, to the dwarves themselves. But they are immune or not immune, they are resistant to it. So, you know, if they get raw Lyrium in some cuts or they inhale it, it can mess them up. Not lethally usually, but it still messes them up. And the surface dwarves will lose that resistance over time. So there's kind of two people who are able to interact with Lyrium. The first is going to be the dwarves, and we'll talk about the second in a bit. But the dwarves are the only ones who are able to get it out of the ground.
Have we covered what justifies the extraction of this volatile nonsense? Because this seems fraught, we'll say.
How do you mean? What do you mean?
You wouldn't do this for a thing you don't really need, I would hope.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so it's used... Lyrium is refined into a metal that is then used in... It's basically made by dwarven weapons and weaponsmiths. And the dwarves are the only people who are actually able to work the metal, but it is like metal that never loses its edge and it's incredibly strong, and it becomes okay. Like this higher class of weapon. It also has it's really good for enchanting with, so it becomes really important to the trade of magical goods as well. So high profit. So
this is like a mithril equivalent sort of thing.
Yeah I think that's a good parallel.
Like this is an economy driver as a good. Okay.
Yeah, and it is nearly restricted by the dwarves. Like the dwarves control the supply of raw Lyrium, and then they refine it, and then those goods are kind of restricted by the dwarves selling the refined weapons, and then also there's, you know, the human chantry, which we'll get into in a little bit. But yeah, that's getting it out of the ground. And I guess before we kind of get into more detail about who uses it for what, I think we do have to take a step aside to the metaphysical for a bit. And I guess before we talk about the beliefs about Lyrium, I have to ask you, do you know what the Fade is in Dragon Age terms?
I feel like that was always kind of squishy. It is like a separate yet somewhat connected plane of existence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you got it.
Inhabited by demons-ish.
Hell yeah, you got it. That's okay. Two. Yep.
They were vaguely named after sins, maybe.
Yep. The demons inhabit, I guess, like, I was gonna say virtues, but I wouldn't say that pride is a virtue. Yeah, I don't know what you would call that. Archetypes. I
want to label the categories.
Yeah, yeah. Emotional archetypes, I guess. They are manifestations of a specific emotion. But yeah, so the Fade is, it's the metaphysical realm to the physical realm of Thedas, which is where all of the stuff in Dragon Age happens. It is a, like, the spirit realm, kind of. It's where the dead go, and it's also where you go when you go to sleep. So it's like a dreaming plane of existence as well. And you're right. It is overrun with demons. And I think we will have to do an entire episode on the Fade and the Veil, which is the thin line that separates the Fade and Thedas, the physical realm. Suffice to say, the Fade is this, like, Well of Souls idea, and it is something that is, like, very present in the people of Dragon Age. The mages are able to go there. The elves are, you know, it is a former land of the elves, possibly, and it's also a place where normal people go when they sleep sometimes. So it's a metaphysical realm that is very present in people's lives. And that's kind of important because when we talk about Lyrium, it exists both in the mortal world and in the Fade, and somehow bridges a gap between them. It's not quite clear why or how, but it grows in this place called in the Raw Fade, which is not claimed by spirits at all. And you're able to kind of go between them based on that.
Okay, so it is, like, both a fuel and a building material, and this is, like, the omni element.
Kind of. Yeah, yeah. And it's also, because of that, it is connected to belief structures for the humans, the dwarves, and, well, basically all of them. All of the races, I think, besides, I don't know how much is known from the Qunari perspective, just because they haven't been super prominent perspective characters in the same way that humans and elves are. But yeah, so the dwarves believe that Lyrium is the blood of the Titans, which are the primordial beings that were the precursors to dwarves. And that's why they think that it kind of has a song, because it is the blood of their old gods. Or
it's pretty metal.
Other old gods. Unclear. Everyone has old gods, right? So, you know, it's a tough to know.
Enough old gods to go around.
Yeah. And I guess, speaking of old gods, Lyrium is kind of believed by the Chantry, which is the... another episode we're going to have to do. The Chantry is the Dragon Age equivalent of the Catholic Church, I guess. But, like, during the time of two popes. So, like, or like 13, 1400s. Catholic Church. There's the Northern Chantry and the Southern Chantry, and that's not important to talk about today, but their whole thing is they're the Androstian faith, and they believe in the Maker, which is the you know, the person who made the world. And they believe that Lyrium is the waters of the Fade, and that the very substance of creation. Everything was made from Lyrium, and I guess the raw stuff you see around is just leftover creation juice that never got used.
Seems a little poorly thought out, but sure.
Yeah, a little bit. It's a fantasy world, you know?
Just like the person who made it, hey, they didn't plan it out right. They had extra.
They had a little extra. Just in case something gets a little weird. You never know. Maybe the maker will return.
Few extra wooden dowels, just in case those ones break.
Yeah, some spares. You never know. The last thing that we need to talk about that will come up a little bit later is that, especially by the end of Inquisition, there's a specific... I can't remember what the DLC is called, but there's a specific DLC that's related to going into the deep roads, going deep into the mines and finding some Lyrium mines. And part of that reveals that there are scholars who are studying the Lyrium and they believe that it is alive, not just an inert metal, which, you know, you take it being connected to the magical realm and, you know, it seems that perhaps it is alive in some form.
That raises some ethical concerns, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, sure does. Sure does. But let's not talk about that. Let's talk about what we use it for.
Okay.
So Lyrium, like I said, it's mined and then it's processed by the dwarves. The dwarves, along with the Tranquil, which we will talk about in a bit, they turn the Lyrium into weapons by mixing the Lyrium into steel. It makes indestructible armor and blades that hold edges forever. And then they also are able to enchant those items with the Lyrium. So by putting Lyrium dust into the metal creations, it kind of gives them the ability to take on better magical properties, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah, it makes it, it's like seeding it with a little bit of a foundation that they can magically build off of.
Yeah. And that's kind of, that is the basic trade of what goes on. It's also, mages will use refined Lyrium and they'll put it into liquids and then ingest them as Lyrium potions, which I think were a much more prominent thing in the previous Dragon Age games. There's not a ton of Lyrium potions going on in the Veilguard right now. But those potions basically allow mages to enter the Fade while they are fully aware, which is something that usually doesn't happen unless you're really powerful.
That's the one that seems weird if these things are alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll find some really terrible some terrible versions of that in a bit.
As is tradition.
One of the I'm trying to remember which game this is in, and I have completely mushed the previous three Dragon Age games in my head together. But another quest line that is a very good name that will kind of help us explain what goes on with Lyrium is the Anvil of the Void. Does this sound familiar to you at all?
It's ringing some kind of a bell.
Okay.
But it's also generic enough that it may be unrelated.
Yeah. It could also just be a Destiny location.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the basic gist is that you go into the deep roads, you're supposed to find this highly coveted Anvil of the Void to make cool stuff, and I honestly don't remember what it was for, but it was because a dwarven paragon named Caradin is like fabled to be this great savior because they are able to create living golems out of Lyrium, and then they held back the blight at some point in long time ago, and you're supposed to go rediscover this anvil, find out what's going on, and hopefully use that for your war effort.
Yeah, this was a decision point in the first game, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I think this was decision point number two is what's coming into my head of like you eventually do find this and then choose to either start making golems or blow the thing up and leave.
Yeah,
it's pretty fuzzy. It's been a lot of years.
Because the decision point there is that when you find it, you discover what actually happened with this device. And it's not that the Lyrium used in the process is like granting life to these things. Actually what's happening is that the anvil is making a giant set of armor the size of the golems that you want to use. Then you stick a dwarf in there, and you pour some liquid, molten hot Lyrium right down the gullet of those dwarves, and now they're golems.
Huh. That seems like you took a few steps off the path if you made it that far.
Yeah. Yeah. <We'll say. laughs> I'm not sure how you get there. Like, you really have to test it.
Yeah.
Someone's got to line up to be the first in line to do that, but,
You know, I bet they didn't pick, would be my assumption.
Yeah, probably not. So they do that, and then they use a specific control rod, and now they have a marching army of automaton golems, and that's fun, and it held back the darkspawn, and
okay.
good on them for it, I guess.
We're doing utilitarianism.
Yeah,
is what we're doing here. Yeah,
it was hidden away for a long time after that, though, so maybe the person in charge was like, actually, I feel bad about all this bad stuff I did. The last kind of major use of this by the dwarves, at least, and I think if you made it to Anvil of the Void, you probably ran into this, but there's a group of dwarves called Shapers, and they create Lyrium runes, and they are stored in the archives of Orzammar, and what they are actual, I guess, like magical memory crystals that are saved in the great archives. So the Shapers are people who are able to work Lyrium into, I guess,
books. Holocrons?
Yeah, yeah. They make holocrons.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know?
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so they make holocrons, the dwarves.
Okay.
Exactly.
Should we explain that, maybe, just in case?
Yeah, I guess. They're audio logs, they're big memory repositories, but they're specifically from the angle of the person who makes them. So it's not like universal truth of like the time as it is happening. It is literally there is the archivist, and that person writes down or, you know, puts their memory into these Lyrium runes, and then that can be accessed for future generations. But it is from a particular point of view, which I think
like
is
a diary entry.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a podcast, I guess.
Perhaps a podcast. They're out here making podcasts in
Orzammar. Do people do diaries anymore? I assume diaries don't exist.
No, we all just journal on our phones.
Yeah.
So that's
speaking of world-ending technology.
World-ending technology. So that's the dwarves. The next ones, I think, we're leading up to the finals here. But first, there's mages. So the mages, like I said, they make these Lyrium potions, and then they kind of use them to enter the Fade. It's part of the ritual harrowing, is what it's called, where they go into the Fade, and I think they have to resist demon possession. And when they come out, if they're possessed by a demon, they get murdered, and if they're not, then they get to be in the circle. The circle of
that
magi.
Seems right. That part of the game is frustrating. From what I recall.
Yes. Yeah, I think that is true. You can also use those potions to kind of boost magical power. I think that's mostly in the first and second games, if I remember right. I think they take on the form of mana potions in the third game, maybe. But what you do is you guzzle one of them potions down, but if you do it too much, you have mana imbalance somehow. The magical juices of the potion do some bad stuff. And you can be conscious dreaming in the Fade. You can be dizzy, or you can hear some voices. Those three things are not equally bad.
Is there like a magical Pepto equivalent you can take to take the edge off?
I don't think so.
Oh, you just gotta ride it out.
I think, yeah, you gotta come down naturally.
Just gotta wait for the trip to be done. All right.
Yeah. The other part, like I mentioned, is it is fatal if you touch the raw form stuff, which is not terrible, except for the part where a lot of these games just have you going in the deep roads surrounded by the stuff. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, I was gonna say the fatal part seems
relatively
rough. Terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the big mage part here is coming back to what I mentioned earlier, the tranquil.
Okay, yeah, that was the thing we put a pin in a number of minutes ago.
Yes. Do you remember the tranquil at all?
Yeah. they have had something done to their minds. That seems to, like, really even them out in probably a little too aggressive sort of a way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably fair. So the tranquil,
like all of the mood stabilizers.
Yes.
All of them times two.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So what happens is it's called the Rite of Tranquility, and it is a ritual, I guess, that's done on mages, and the idea behind it, and then we'll maybe get into the actual use, was that it was intended to be a tool of, like, last resort to stop uncontrolled mages who are kind of going crazy and are very destructive and either hurt themselves or others. And it is a thing you are branded with lyrium, typically because of the chantry on your forehead. And you have this lyrium.
Chill.
Yep. You have this lyrium brand. And then it removes the magical ability from you. So you no longer, well, it's not even the magical ability. You lose all connection to the Fade, basically. So, like, you are no longer attached to the realm of souls and where the dead go and where people dream.
Okay. So this is like your magical lobotomy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And as you can imagine, something that has such an immense power has perhaps been used punitively or maybe for political reasons to inhibit civilian discourse about discontented mages. You just shut them up. Instead of throw them in prison, just do something else with them.
Completely unlike actual lobotomy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We certainly wouldn't do that. And the byproduct here is that the Tranquil, because they are no longer connected to the Fade and they aren't mages anymore, they are now able to use lyrium. So they can work with the dwarves to smith things, although that rarely happens. Their bigger use is that they receive the lyrium infused goods and then they can enchant them. And they work with the circle mages to enchant items, and then the enchanted items are sold to the public. So now these tranquil people who have lost their magical ability because the church has branded them with their logo on their forehead are creating wealth for the church themselves.
Cool.
It's a real circle there, you know?
They're part of it, yeah.
Yep. And the, I guess, like the emotional stuff you talked about. So the state that they are in after this is that they are much more like sleepwalkers, I guess. They are, in a word, I guess, tranquil. They are not passionate about anything. They're not like full automatons, and they kind of have like come to terms with the fact that perhaps this has saved their lives from being destroyed by a demon or, you know, having a bad time otherwise. But they're also not zombies, I guess. Like, they understand that things have happened to them since becoming tranquil, and they're probably would have realized that their former selves would be a little bit traumatized if they found out what was happening. They're also perfectly logical beings. So they don't just follow orders for order's sake. They will agree to not do things, but only if there is a logical reason not to. So they're kind of the perfect tucked away lackeys of an otherwise lyrium addicted church.
If Lieutenant Commander Data was a magical eunuch, I guess.
Yes.
Is that all right?
Yeah, 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 that fits.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings us to the final bit of lyrium here, and it is kind of the bigger issue, the so-called drugs that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So lyrium, when it is ingested by a mage, will give them super awesome, cool magic powers. When the raw stuff is given to them, they die. But
seems risky.
Yep. What if you give that good refined stuff to people who aren't mages? Well, sir, you have the Templar Order. Do you remember the Templars?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are like Inquisition stand-in, right?
Kind of, yes. So they are very much the mage cops. Like, they are the military wing of the Chantry.
But, like, specifically to keep mages from going rogue.
Yes. Yeah. So their main job, I guess, is that they're supposed to be hunting abominations, which are people who have been overtaken by demons and then are kind of possessed running around. Apostate mages, which are the mages that are just normal mages but aren't kind of under the control of the circle of magi. And then, yes, they are the magical cops who make sure that the circle does what the Chantry wants them to do and kind of keeps them in line.
Yeah, there's like a Babylon 5 parallel here I could draw that I don't think you'd understand. So maybe I've found a way to make that episode happen now.
Yeah, that is completely lost on me.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm going to convince you to watch it, which is fine. So we'll do a Psycore episode someday.
That sounds fun. Psycore sounds like a good name of something.
Yeah. That show's probably best consumed via a wiki article anyway.
Those are my favorite things.
Yeah.
So the Templars, in order to keep the demons at bay and control over the mages who can just summon meteors and stuff, they have to have their own power. So they use lyrium intravenously, it seems.
Okay.
Also seems bad.
Man, I'd love to know what order these things happened in.
Like, who decided to try that?
Yeah. Was that before or after you watched a mage touch it and die?
Yeah, who knows? Ugh, I can't imagine. But I guess the bad side, the other bad side of this is that lyrium is incredibly addictive, turns out. What a surprise.
Yeah, why not?
So, just to like peel this back a little bit further. So the Chantry, right? They're the human-ish run church, but I think it's like less human at this point. So they and the dwarves take all of the lyrium. The dwarves make stuff out of it and sell that stuff because they're the only people who can work it and refine it. The
seems fine.
Chantry takes the refined stuff, and whether it's refined, you know, jewelry and stuff that the dwarves are making, or just refined lyrium powder, and they distribute it to their mages, and they distribute it to their tranquil to make tons of money, and then they take it and give it to their elite soldier force because it, of course, makes them stronger. It gives them additional powers. It gives them abilities to take on mages when a normal human wouldn't be able to do that. And also, it keeps those Templars addicted for life. So they have a military order that is completely in their thralls because they control the lyrium trade.
Yeah, so now we've crossed over into cartel territory.
Yeah. There's a really good quote from, I think this is from Inquisition, but this is about the lyrium trade and the Templars. It says, "Once that one vial is gone, I'll have perhaps a week before I start to feel the effects. Within a month, perhaps two, I'll go insane, and there's nothing to be done about it. The Chantry controls the supply of lyrium, and thus controls the Templars. There's no turning back from the order once you're within."
Seems like maybe don't sign up for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those must be some pretty compelling recruitment posters that they have devised.
Yeah, I imagine that a lot of it is people who have been affected by apostate mages. Like, especially at the end of 2, there is a big old battle in Kirkwall that kicks off the Mage Templar War, and it becomes a big thing where the Templars and the Mages had this big battle, and then I think that is where the recruitment comes in. Because also,
okay,
I don't think the Templar Order is like the Grey Wardens, where there is a certain amount of expected attrition in the initiation. I think you just get the lyrium and you get superpowers. Pretty sure that's how it works.
Okay.
So there is a near infinite amount of Templars and less so when it comes to mages. Oh yeah, the powers. What they actually are able to do. So they can dispel magic, they can inhibit spell casting. So they kind of just have a hard counter to mages.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have an immunity to magic to some large degree, and mostly is only because they are able to ingest lyrium. And this is kind of back to the music stuff I was talking about. So they can hear lyrium, and it is like a song that plays in the back of their mind, and it kind of fades away over time. Once they stop taking in the lyrium, and possibly that will kill them. If they stop, you know, cold turkey and can no longer get their lyrium, they will slowly die, or I guess quickly die within a couple months. But they lose their connection with whatever that song is in the lyrium.
Does it come back if they start up again?
Yes.
Or is that like a one and done? Okay.
Yeah, it comes back. And then kind of the last bit here, the Templar retirement home. So you do your service for the Templars.
Farm upstate, huh?
Uh-huh. And you are sent to Fantasy France, and you live out the rest of your life in peace with
I'm sure.
With as much lyrium as you would like. They kind of get It says here, when Templars retire honorably, they are provided a small stipend of lyrium to stave off the hunger, but the cravings hit some Templars much harder than others.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just have an entire army of drug addicted superheroes, and then you send them to Fantasy France, and maybe they live the rest of their life in peace as their mind slowly disappears because of the fantasy drugs you gave them.
Yikes.
Yeah. So lyrium, it's a mineral of immense power. You make cool swords that never lose their edge. You can kill a mage just by touch. I'm sure that there's some fun fanfic out there about using lyrium as like a kryptonite to some major mages.
Like tip some crossbow bolts or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it also has some pretty intense economic consequences for kind of the major church in Dragon Age, and you know what they end up doing with their warriors.
Yeah, it's like all of the bad substances rolled into one.
Yeah,
from all of societal's ills.
Yeah, and this one really
convenient goo.
Yeah, this really isn't getting into any of the stuff in the Veilguard either. I specifically made the notes for this episode and the next one we'll be talking about, which is Red Lyrium, before the Veilguard came out, because I didn't know how much it would be involved at all. On the cover art, your main character is holding a blue glowing dagger that has real Frodo sting energy.
Okay. Yeah.
Turns out it's pure lyrium, and this entire game, at least the first act, is just like, hey, guess what? We're gonna just drop some truth bombs on you about lyrium and songs and gods and all that nonsense. It is, none of that stuff is in
lyrium is people. All right.
Yeah. None of that stuff is in this episode. I feel like we're a little too close to that stuff, and I don't wanna.
Yeah.
Don't wanna ruin the surprise for some folks, because there is there's a part in that game where you walk up to a pedestal, and the button you push is, it says press A to view regret, and you do that five times and get some revelations. So that's just fun for everyone.
Yeah, the holocron of regret.
Yeah, there's five of them. It's kind of a big deal. But I wanted to get this out before then, and we did not do that. But there's some fun Lyrium stuff that I think we will do an addendum on at a future date, because there's a lot going on in the cosmology when it relates to Lyrium. The bad stuff, but also maybe the good stuff?
Maybe. We'll see. I doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not great, but yeah, maybe it's not all not bad.
So we have a Lyrium. Will that be a mini, do you think, or another full?
Yeah,
full length up.
Our next mini episode will be Red Lyrium, because it's mostly retreading some of this stuff with a little bit of change and less about what people are doing to make things out of it, and maybe perhaps more about the drugs.
Okay,
which would be fun. Solid. All right. That is our episode on Lyrium.
It's real bad for you.
Yeah, it's real bad for you. Don't take it.
Turns out.
Stay away from it, and also don't eat it.
Or touch it. Or exist in a society that relies on it.
Don't get a paper cut near Lyrium and then get some in your finger. That's bad for you. So thanks for listening. That's going to be our episode on this. Like I said, next we will have our mini on Red Lyrium, which will be coming out. And I think that will technically close out BioWare month, but I do have one more actual Veilguard topic I will be bringing in.
Cannot be stopped.
It's about the dead, and that's going to be a good time. There's a new faction that I did not know about until I started playing this game called the Mourn Watch. And they're necromancers, and we're gonna have some fun discussion about the dead. It's good stuff.
That's a fun name.
Yeah, it's a really good name. They're very green and purple, and it's very good.
That's some good high fantasy nonsense, I imagine.
Yeah, we're gonna perhaps talk about the questionably alive or dead king of Navara, and perhaps the necromancers that talk to him to disseminate policy to his people.
Perfect.
But that will be another codex entry for another time. You can go to gordonhamburger.com for links, words, videos. I don't think there's anything new coming up. Maybe that Starfield video, but I wouldn't hold your breath on that one. Turns out it's hard making videos.
Videos are hard.
Our music is by Nicholas Cahill. You can find the link to his SoundCloud in our bio. As always, rate and review. We will be back next week with another Codex entry on another rock, but this time it's red.